Transcendental Pastimes from the fifth canto. This is Rishabhadev Mahima, the glories of King Rishabhadev. King Nabi, who was the ruler of Bharatvarsh, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead along with his wife, Madhur Devi, for the purpose of acquiring a son like the Lord. Pleased with his yajna, Lord Vishnu appeared there, and the king felt just like a poor man who had suddenly attained great riches. The brahmanas offered wonderful prayers to Lord Vishnu. O most worshipable Lord, we are your eternal servants. O you are full in yourself. Please mercifully accept a little service from us. Our king Nabi has a goal in life to have a son like you. In this way, he is like a person who approaches a wealthy man and begs for a handful of grain. We are ashamed to perform a sacrifice for this paltry purpose of the king. We have invited you to come here for such an insignificant purpose, and probably we've incurred an offense at your feet. Please overlook our foolish activity. Lord Vishnu was pleased, and he said, I cannot find anyone equal to me. I shall personally expand as a plenary portion, Shakti of Esh, and appear as a son of Madhur Devi and King Nabi. Eventually, the Lord appeared as the son of King Nabi, and he had all the wonderful symptoms and signs of an incarnation or descent of God. His feet were marked with various lines and symbols like lotus, thunderbolt flag, etc. The father, Nabi, King Nabi, thought that this child was the best of all people on the earth. So he named him Rishab, which means the best of all human beings. So he hence became known as Rishabhadev. As he grew up, his qualities manifested one by one, and eventually he grew to adulthood. Indra became envious of Lord Vishnu in the form of Rishabhadev, so he decided to stop pouring water on the earth planet, specifically Bharatvarsha. Using his own Yogamaya potency, Rishabhadev, however, arranged for profuse rains to fall upon his kingdom. Seeing his son was very much appreciated by everyone and fully grown and qualified, King Nabi enthroned him as the emperor of the world. And he and his wife went to Badrika Ashram to worship Badri Vishal, Lord Vishnu, and perform austerities. Eventually, they went back home, back to Godhead. As the ideal king, Rishabhadev set the perfect example. So before assuming lordship of the, or kingship, he lived the life of a brahmachari. And then afterwards he entered the Grihastha ashram by marrying Jayanti, who surprisingly enough was gifted to him by the king of heaven, King Indra, who had apparently given up his prior envy. King Rishabhadev had 100 powerful sons, And the eldest son, Bharat, later became the ruler of this planet, and the planet was named after this Bharat, the son of King Rishabhadev. And hence, the planet became known as Bharata Varsha. Rishabhadev was an ideal king, and he taught the public how to perform their duties, while all the time maintaining himself as an ideal Kshatriya. He showed people by his own example how one could stay in their particular ashram or social position, Grihastha and Kshatriya, and attain perfection in Dharmart Kaman Moksha. At all times he remained under the control of an order direction of the Brahmanas. While performing over he performed 100 sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Lord Vishnu in all respects. The people were so satisfied in Bharatvarsha during King Rishabhadev's rule that they didn't want anything. They had everything they could want. And they were very affectionate towards their king. One time, Rishabhadev came in a meeting of Brahmanas. So he took the opportunity to teach his sons how to rule the world properly. So he gave various philosophical instructions, Rishabhadev Shiksha, which are contained in the fifth canto. And there are many verses therein which Prabhupada favored and often quoted from in his preaching and during his preaching campaign in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. These verses, Rishabhadev's teachings of Lord Rishabhadev, they come from the fifth canto of Bhagavatam in chapter 5. In the first 18 verses, there are several verses which Prabhupada often quoted. Rishabha Uvacha. Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke kashtan kaman arhate vidbujam ye tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shudyed yasmad brahma sokyam twanantam. My dear boys, said King Rishabhadev, of all the different living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has accepted a human form of life should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance, austerity, tapo, dibyam, and thus attain the divine position of devotional service. Tapo, dibyam, putrakayena sattvam. The heart will become purified and transcendental. By such activity, one's heart is purified. And when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. Brahma Sokyam Twanantam, Anantam, unending Brahma Sukh, the bliss and happiness of Brahman or realizing God and being absorbed in his devotional service. This is a famous verse, chapter 5, number 2, about the value and power of serving the great devotees. Mahat sevam dwaram mahor vimuktes tamo dwaram yoshitam sangi sangam mahantaste samachitta prashanta Vimanyava Surida Saddavoye. Mukti Dwara. The door to liberation is opened by Mahat Saving, Sevam, serving spiritually advanced persons. One can attain the path of liberation from material bondage. In other words, one can attain mukti, liberation, only by rendering service to highly advanced spiritual personalities. These personalities are either Mayavadis or devotees. When one wants to emerge into the Lord's existence or wants to associate with the personality of Godhead, one should render service to the appropriate Mahatmas. For one who is not interested in liberation or a life of devotion, and he prefers to associate with people fond of women and sex, then the path to hell is wide open. These Mahatmas that are worthy of service are equipoised, samachitta prashanta. They are samachitta, they are balanced, equipoised. And they see everyone as a spiritual entity. That is why they're equipoised. They do not see any material difference, any difference between one living entity and another. As such, they are very peaceful, prashanta. And they are fully engaged in devotional service. They are vimanyava. Manya means anger. Like Abhimanyu, he's always angry. He's rather on his husband. They are devoid of anger and they work for everyone's benefit. Surida sadavo. They are friends and well-wishers of everyone. They do not behave in any abominable way. Such people are known as Mahatmas. Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahor Vimuktes Tamo Dwaram Yoshitam Sangi Sangam Mahantaste Samachitta Prashanta Vimanyava Surida Sadavoye. Now, this is a verse about the crazy materialists that rather would rather love their bodies. I love my body and love their senses than love and serve God. They'd rather love their bodies and love their senses and serve their senses. The devotees would rather love God and serve the senses of God. Chapter 5, verse 4. Vrishabhadev Shiksha. Nunam pramattak kurute vikarma Yarindriya Pritaya Aprinoti Nasarumanye Yata Atmano Yam Asana Pikle Shada Asadeha. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activities. Indriya Priti, Priti, Pyar, Bhav, Prem. When one loves his senses, I love my eyes, I love my tongue, my ears, my sense of smell, my sense of touch, and my working senses, hands, legs, stomach, and genital. Because I, Indriya Priti, I have so much love for my body, and that's my full identity. Then we eat, drink, and be merry. So I, pramatak, I perform all kinds of totally mad and insane and crazy activities. And thus I engage in unlimited varieties of vikarma. Nunam pramatak kurute vikarma. And vikarma, of course, is sinful activities forbidden in the scriptures. Such a person, he does not know that due to his past misdeeds and sins, he has already received a material body, which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Asan apikleshada. Although it's asan or asat, our physical body, man, woman, is temporary, but it gives us pain, misery. Klesha da, deha. Asan apikleshada asadeha. Actually, the living entity, the jivatma, should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Rishabhadev tells his sons, listen, I think an intelligent man should not involve himself again in activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets one material body after another. Rishabhadev is advising his princes and 100 sons, don't become royal sense enjoyers. Be careful. Don't waste your life enjoying your senses. This further teaching, 6.5. Parabhavas tavara bhoda jato yavanna jigyasata atmatattvam yavat kriyastavad idam manohai karmatmakam yena sharira bandha. Listen, my dear sons. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to the miseries arising from ignorance. Whether karma is sinful or pious, papa karma or punya karma, still it has reactions. A person engaged in any type of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruit of activities and contaminated with material desire. As long as the mind remains in this impure condition, the consciousness will be unclear and cloudy, foggy. And because of that, one will remain absorbed in mundane material karmas and be forced to accept a material body. This next verse, 8, 5, 5, 8, is he's warning his sons about sex attraction. It's the clincher. If one becomes free from sex attraction, then he can get liberated. Pumsa striya mituni bhavam etam tayor mito riddaya grantim ahu ato griha shetra sutapta viter janasya moho yam ahamameti. The attraction between male and female is a basic principle of material existence. The sex attraction, the attraction for sexual life between a pumsa male and striya woman. Pumsa striya mituni bhavam. On the basis of this misconception of sex attraction, mituni bhav, instead of having seva bhav or krishna bhav or love for serving Krishna, people have bhav, they have intense feelings, desire, love, attraction for sexual union. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, ridaya grantim. Granti means hard knot. Ridaya means heart. When one is connected or tied up with a woman, his heart is also tied up. His heart is tied up in knots, tightly. And thus he becomes intensely attracted to his body, his home, property, children, relatives, and wealth, his griha, kshetra, his body or home, his sutta, children, up to relatives, and vitae, wealth. In this way, one increases the illusions in his life and thinks in terms of I and mine, aham mameti, I am the husband, I am the father, I am the provider. This is my husband. This is my house. These are my children. And this is my wife. And this is all maya. Next verse, 18. Vrishabhadeva warns his sons not to take up the responsibility of a guru or a father, unless he can deliver his dependents from death. Gurur nasasyat, swajano nasasyat, pita nasasyaj, janani nasasyat, devam natatsat, sanapatishcha sasyan, namocha yedya samopetam rityam. One who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipful demigod. It also says swajana, relative. So there are examples of various persons who were not qualified to be gurus, relatives, etc. Gurur nasasyat. One should nasyat, not become a guru. If he's a guru like Shukracharya, who advised his disciple Bali to go against Vamanadeva, who is actually Lord Vishnu. Guru is supposed to teach the disciple to surrender to Vishnu, serve and love and return to Vishnu, or go to Vishnu. So guru or nasasyat, don't accept a guru like Shukracharya. Swajano nasasyat, and don't accept a relative. If you have a relative, brother, if you have an older brother and his name is Ravana, and he's against God and stealing God's shakti, or at least attempting to, stealing the Maya shakti and causing so much distress to Ram, then such a swajana nasasyat, he should be rejected because he's not qualified to be a proper human being or a proper relative. Swajano nasasyat. So therefore, of Vibhishana, the younger brother of Ravana, or maybe older, I don't know what, but the swajan, the relative, Vibhishana rejected Ravana and he surrendered to Ram and became his great devotee and loyal servant. Then pita nasasyaj. No one should become a father unless he can teach his son to worship Vishnu. He should not teach his son to be a good computer programmer or teach his son to be a good man, raise a family, take care of your children, pay your taxes. Such a man is not qualified to be anyone's father. A proper father is a guru. He liberates his children by instructing them in Dharma from the earliest of life. Komrat Achrat Pragyo, Dharma Bhagavatamiha. He teaches them in Bhagavad Dharma from the age of 5 and engages them in Ekadasi Vrata and Janmastami, vow Janmastami Vrata from the age of 8. And he leads a very exemplary life and always teaching them how to worship and take shelter of God. That is a proper pita or father, but pita nasyasyat. Pita nasyasyat. One is not a father if he's like Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu is an example of the non-father, the unfather, who did not teach Prahlad, his dear and beloved son, darling son, about Vishnu Bhakti. Rather, he was an atheist, envious against Vishnu. Now it says, Janani nasasya. Janani means mother. Pita means father. So one should not become a mother if he's against, if she's against her son, or against her son's, especially if her son happens to be God. So the stepmother of Ramachandra was Kaikeyi. She was a Janani. She was one of King Dasara's 365 queens, one of his prime Madri, and this Kaikeyi and Sumitra. They were the queens, of some of the primary queens of King Dasharath during Treta Yuga. And of course, Kaushalya. Kaushalya is, I believe, the mother of Ram. But Kaikeyi was envious. She wanted her son Bharat to be the ruler, so she arranged to banish Ram. She was not a very suitable mother or stepmother, so she cited an example by the Acharyas. Tika's in this verse as the unmother. She's not a Janani. She's, Kaikeyi is excluded because she's not teaching her son to worship God. Of course, her stepson Ram was God. Daivam natatsyat tatsyan. So one should not be a demigod or associate with demigods unless one should not become a demigod unless he gets absorbed in liberation. So King Katvanga was a demigod, always very chivalrous and powerful hero, always fighting on behalf of the demigods in their various skirmishes and encounters and wars against the demons and asuras. And he was so busy with that work, and somehow he heard Akashvani that you only have a few minutes to live. So immediately he gave up that demigod position. He came to the earth so he could engage in intense austerities to realize God. So no one should become a demigod unless he's interested in realizing God. And then it says, Napati Nasyan. No one should become a husband unless he can deliver his dependents from birth and death. So the example of an unhusband or a non-husband is Kaliya Nag. Kaliya, that great snake of Yamuna, Vrindavan Leela. His wives, the Nagapatnis, the wife of the snake king Kaliya, the wives of the snake king Kaliya, they're very devoted to Krishna. And they wanted to offer everything to him. But he was so much envious and poisoning everything and everyone with his envious nature. So he was properly rejected, and the Nagapatnis rejected Kaliya because he went against Krishna. And that's proper. One should reject a husband if he goes against Krishna. Or one should reject a wife if they go against Krishna. Or one should reject a father like Hiranyakashipu if he goes against Krishna. Or one should reject a mother like Kaikeyi if she goes against Krishna. Or one should reject a guru like Shukracharya if he goes against Krishna. Or one should reject a brother or sister or some cousin or relative if they go against Krishna, as Vibhishana rejected Ravan and left his kingdom. Eventually, after the war and after Ravana was killed, Ravana appointed Vibhishana the very ruler of that same kingdom of Lanka. Bhagavan Ramachandra ki jai. So that's the examples, that no one should take on these positions unless they can liberate their dependent from birth and death. And this verse, he talks about Vrishabhadev's reminding his sons about the value and power of devotees, Vaishnava Kripa, Mahant Kripa, that one may be very austere and very intelligent and self-controlled, but if he doesn't attain the mercy of a Vaishnava, he will not attain spiritual perfection. This is Canto 5, verse chapter 12, verse 12. The last verse is 5:5:18. Guror nasasyat, swajano nasasyat, Pita nasasyat janani nasasyat daivam natatsyan napatishchacha chasasyan namochayed yasamupetya mrityum. So after instructing his sons in paravidya, divine knowledge, and Rishabhadeva installed his eldest son Bharata as the emperor of the world, and he became indifferent to all material activities, even caring for his body or brushing his hair, and eventually left home and wandered the earth alone as an avadut, without any of his queens or regalia or opulence or comforts. And to the ordinary man, he appeared rather dull. That's why they call him Judd, Judd Bharat, the stone man. Judd means stone, the stone man of Bharat, stone age man. He was dull, seemed to appear dull and inert and foolish like a rock, a moving rock. And he traveled everywhere through towns and villages, hills, countrysides, forests, military encampments, to Yatrinivas, the guest houses for pilgrims, and Goshalas. And he met all kinds of people, and oftentimes seeing his rather otherworldly and unkempt and dirty situation, physical appearance, many bad people and low-class people would gather around this wandering avadut, Rishab avadut. And they would mistreat him in horrible ways. They would throw stones at him, and or even dirt, or pick up stool and throw it on him. They're always threatening him and beating him. They even went to the extent of spitting on him and urinating on him. And even passed air in front of him. In other words, they farted in his face. And they called him bad names and troubled him in so many ways. But he was detached. He was avadut. He was fixed in God. He was unshaken. He was tolerant, inconceivably tolerant, more tolerant than a tree, feeling himself lower than the straw on the street. Even in the fifth canto, we see the teachings of Lord Chaitanya embodied in the life and example of Rishabhadeva avadut. Trinadapi snichena tarariva suhishna amanina manidena kirtaniya sadahari. He never cared about these insults. He didn't retaliate. He didn't seek revenge. He didn't kick back, fight back, curse, and return the mudras or cursing. He didn't become angry. He simply walked through the world alone with God. He was actually very beautiful. He appeared like a demigod with red lotus eyes. Although his hair was unkempt, still he's very powerful in body and very effulgent and very attractive. Even married women became induced with the lust when they saw him. So seeing how antagonistic the public was, he decided to just stay in one place in the jungle path. So he just went into the forest and he laid on the ground and acted like a python, performed a particular type of brata, it's called a jagrata or something, ajagata brata, the python brata, where you just sit there and if anything comes along your way, you eat it. So although he was passing, he wasn't going anywhere. He was passing stool and urine in the same place. Almost like some old man in the hospital. But they weren't changing his sheets. So he would just lie down or roll over, and that stool and urine would cover his body. But most surprisingly, and this is pretty significant, for 80 miles and 10 yojans in all directions of his body, the whole countryside and forest became filled with the most beautiful flower-like fragrance, although there was simply coming from urine and stool. Well, this is an amazing, inconceivable phenomenon, because he's a partial incarnation of the Lord. He had all mystic powers, but he didn't use them. He He finally came, he wandered all over India and went to the province of Karnataka in South India. And in that one forest, there was a huge forest fire, and in that conflagration, Vrishabhadeva gave up his body in the fire. In that region, there was the king of Konka, South India, his name was Arhat, Maharaj Arhat, A-R-H-A-T. He heard about Vrishabhadeva's rather unusual activities, wandering as an avadut, naked, etc. So he started imitating them, and he introduced a new form of religion, King Arhat. He introduced the Jain religion. And this was not very Vedic. They didn't follow the Vedic principles. And that was the end of Vrishabhadeva. Next Leela, we'll talk about the glories of his eldest son, Maharaj Bharata. Although, as I mentioned, in Treta Yuga, there was a great king who was the son of brother of Ramachandra, considered part of the Chaturvyuha, Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughna, and Ram. His name was also King Bharat, son of Kaikeyi, but this earth planet or this land of India, this whole world, they were not named after him, but they were named after the eldest son of King Vrishabhadeva, which I believe is from Satyuga. So that's for millions and millions of years, this country of India, and in a larger way, the whole earth planet was known as Bharata Varsha. So in the next Bhagavad Leela, we'll hear about the glories of Maharaj Bharata.